From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Less than 1 year out from the presidential election, a new EWTN News Real Clear Opinion Research poll finds American Catholics divided according to age, race, and the practice of the faith. How will those divisions play out in 2020? This week on Register Radio, we talk to Carl Cannon of Real Clear Politics. Then Register film critic Deacon Stephen Graydonis gives us a glimpse of movies you won't want to miss. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, joined by my co-host Matthew Bunsen. What do American Catholics think about President Trump? Are they open to re-electing him in 2020? What do Catholics think about the job of Pope Francis and the bishops in handling the clergy sex abuse crisis? Has the credibility of Catholic leaders been damaged by the crisis? These questions and many more are explored by a new poll conducted by Real Clear Opinion Research in partnership with EWTN News. And here to discuss this poll that was released this week on December 8th, we are joined by Carl Cannon, the D.C. Bureau Chief of Real Clear Politics. Welcome, Carl.
Thanks, Jen. I'm glad to be here.
So, Carl, I'm hoping that many of our listeners have already seen some of these poll results because all of our websites, your website there at Real Clear Politics, as well as EWTN News and Catholic News Agency and The Register have been writing about this all week. But in case they haven't heard, what are your biggest takeaways from this poll?
Well, there were several in my mind. The first was is that a majority of Catholic voters, and not a small majority, a decisive majority, think that the United States has become less hospitable to, you know, people of faith. And that's, you know, and there were different ways. John Del Volpe, who did this poll, asked him, and, do you agree people are becoming less tolerant of religion? 70% said yes, only 25% disagreed. And, you know, that's not... Catholic voters, the large majority, do not think that's a good thing. When asked, you know, would they like Christian values to play a more important role in society, Catholic voters, by 2-1, said yes. And this was more, it was a majority of all overall voters, but about 50, you know, a little over 50%. Catholic voters, 62% to 31%, would like Christian values to play a more important role in society. So those two things... You know, they give you pause, and the increased secularization of the media and politics, big majorities of Catholics are concerned about that. And then on the political side, you know, these Democrats, all the major Democrats lead President Trump in these mock heats, you know, among Catholic voters. And that breaks down pretty consistently. Latino voters less likely to vote for Donald Trump. Young voters much less likely to support the president than older Catholic voters. And what we found, you know, and Matthew and I have written about this, and the more devout voters tend to be more conservative and more willing to give the president a second term. Those are, to me, the big takeaways.
Yeah, I want to talk about the findings on President Trump a little bit, and then I'm going to ask Matthew a little bit about the Catholic vote here. But, you know, so you said that you mentioned a couple facts about Trump that are really curious, and when I look at the poll, and you know, I wonder how these two things can fit together. So on one hand, the Catholics are open to reelecting Trump. And that was a pretty nice majority that would say, sure, I'll vote for him, or I will possibly vote for him. On the other hand, every time when they set up this like mock contest or this mock vote and said, okay, if the election were today, who would you vote for, Trump or Biden, or Trump and Sanders, or Trump and, you know, and so on down the list. Trump didn't do very well, and that was among the general Catholic population as well as among the active Catholic, those who participate in certain factors of Catholic life more than others. So how can those two things fit together? How can they be supportive of him and, you know, considering reelecting him, but then the Democrats win in these mock elections?
Well, that's a good question, and I wondered that myself and gave it some thought. But there's two aspects to it. The first, and I'll say one that's more favorable to the president, and then one that may be more worrisome to the president. The favorable one is that, look, you get a binary choice, and people are asked if the race. If the poll question is, and it's been asked this way since the 1930s, if the election were held today, would you vote for, you know, Joe Biden versus, you know, Donald Trump? That's the way it's asked. Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders. And even lesser-known candidates like Pete Buttigieg, he comes up, the mayor of South Bend, he comes out ahead of Donald Trump. And, you know, no incumbent likes to be underwater in that question. But then when you ask this other question, would you definitely vote for him, or you might vote for him, the one you mentioned, then he gets over 50%. What that tells me is, and this is the explanation that's favorable to the president, those people have open minds. And, A, it depends very much on which one of these Democrats are nominated. Right now, swing voters, most American rank-and-file people who go about their jobs are not political junkies. They're not paying close attention. This election's a year, you know, it's 11 months away. So, okay, Bernie Sanders, yeah, okay, Sanders, Liz Warren, I don't really know her, but yeah, okay, I'm mad at Trump, or I'm tired of his Twitter. Okay, I'd vote for her. But as you had a campaign, this Democrat would have to pick a running mate, would have to explain stances, there'll be debates, you'll have a binary election, and in a choice where the Democrats are really moving their party to the left on policy. And culture. I mean, it's become a very liberal party, and these contrasts and the swing voters then would be those Catholic voters who say, you know, yeah, I'd vote for Biden, but suppose Biden's not the nominee and somebody else, and Trump makes his case. Those people are open, and so in that sense, you'd think this thing's open. It's an open question. As long as you have a majority of people who have open minds, the incumbent has a chance to make his case. So that's the best scenario for Donald Trump. The worrisome thing to me, and I'd be curious what Matthew thinks of this, but a majority of Catholics, like non-Catholics, support impeaching and removing the president from office. That's the number that would worry me the most if I were working, you know, in the Trump campaign. So, all right, we need to turn that around somehow. So those numbers, they don't all go together perfectly, but it makes you think that this election's an open question still.
That's right. I mean, that's a very interesting point. I didn't mention that, but, you know, there are high disapproval ratings of the president. There are those portions that would say that they would, a majority who say they would consider voting for him again, and yet there was a very high approval rating for impeachment. So it seems that we are definitely still at a moment of watching very closely, especially this week with the impeachment hearings going on, the articles of impeachment. I mean, we're just at a critical moment. Of course, it should be mentioned that EWTN is going to, and Real Clear, are going to be doing three more polls in the coming year as we lead up into the election. And Matthew, it just makes me think to ask the question now.
Sure.
Why are we doing, why is EWTN involved in this? Why is a religious network conducting these polls?
Well, EWTN News, if we're going to be serving our readers, our listeners, our viewers with our news coverage, especially our election coverage and understanding where we are as a church, we need to understand where Catholics are standing on the issues, what they're thinking at this point, but also how they're living their lives as Catholics to really be able then to serve them better. But we also look at this poll, as I've said on EWTN News Nightly, for example, that this is a kind of diagnostic tool for all of us. If we want to find out what is the health of American Catholicism, this, I think, is going to be a key instrument for doing that, especially as we're looking at the next polls. And again, as a news organization, to be able to partner with an entity like Real Clear is very important for us as a growing news organization, but also to be able to partner with people who can tell us the most about where we are as a country, but also as a faith in the United States.
And we've already talked a little bit about how many divisions there are within Catholics, you know, who vote. We've talked about age. We've talked about the Hispanics a little bit. And there's a difference in active Catholics as well as those who are not so active in their faith. So the real question becomes, is there really a Catholic vote? How would you answer that question?
Well, you know, we've talked about this since John F. Kennedy ran, and Jeanette, you weren't even born then, so I won't pull rank on you. But Jack Kennedy got almost 80% of the Catholic vote, and it brought him to the White House. And what everybody was concerned about going into it on the Democratic side was, will there be a backlash? You know, there's never been a Catholic president. And people whisper there, you know, will he take orders from the Pope? Well, you know, is this the Vatican's man in the White House? Well, that turned out to be, Kennedy dispensed of that very well. The Protestant vote split the way it normally does, but the Catholics turned out for him. So ever since then, we've been looking for the Catholic vote. But if you're just using it like that phrase, you know, the Catholics vote pretty much the way Americans vote, writ large. But in these very close elections, it's important, you know, to look and see if Hillary Clinton had got the same percentage of the Catholic vote that Barack Obama got the first time he ran, she'd be president now. So although there are these small differences, in a big country where you're looking at these swing states with big, significant Catholic populations, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, that are with outsized influence, it becomes important to know where the Catholic vote is and which part of the Catholic vote is going which way. So, you know, it's for, a little bit for political junkies, but it's also, I would tell you this right now, if you could tell me who's going to win the majority of Catholic votes in 2020, I think I could tell you who the president would be.
Well, Carl Cannon, D.C. Bureau Chief of Real Clear Politics, I appreciate that you are sharing your expertise with us at ncregister.com, and we look forward to talking to you again in these future polls.
Anytime.
When I come back, we are joined by Register film critic Deacon Stephen Graydonis with his preview of movies this season. This is Register Radio. More when we return.
If you're like me, you probably go through the same thing every Christmas. So many names on the list and not sure of what to get them. This year, I'm giving something special. Subscriptions to EWTN's National Catholic Register. It's the award-winning newspaper that's filled with solid Catholic reporting, Catholic education, book reviews, entertainment, travel, and more. If I order a subscription for myself or give one as a gift, I get a DVD of EWTN's original movie, Mother Cabrini, absolutely free. And I save on every additional subscription that I give. Here's how to order.
Get 26 issues of EWTN's National Catholic Register for less than $2 per issue. Just go to ncregister.com/radio. Save even more and get $10 off on each additional gift subscription. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, here with my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. As moviegoers await the premiere of the final Star Wars film, The Rise of Skywalker, other films are debuting that the Register's film critic says should not be missed. What are the gems and can't-be-missed movies this season? To give us a preview, we're joined by Deacon Stephen Graydonis, our film critic. Welcome, Deacon Stephen.
Jeanette, it's good to be here.
So when we connected earlier in the week and I was asking you about joining us here on Register Radio, you told me of your enthusiasm for a film that's debuting this weekend, actually, and it's not typical holiday film fare. What's that movie?
The movie is called A Hidden Life. It's by Terrence Malick, who is a cinematic legend and is well known to many of our listeners for his films, The New World and especially The Tree of Life. The subject may also be known to some of our listeners. Blessed Franz Jägerstätter, a martyr of the Nazi regime, an Austrian conscientious objector who was beheaded in 1943 for refusing the soldier's oath of allegiance to Hitler. I was already fascinated by the subject, and the fact that Malick, of all people, has taken this on had me over the moon with anticipation and also anxiety, because I really wanted to love this film.
Yeah, and you really do love this film. I read your review this week on the Register's website, ncregister.com. It's called a cinematic hymn of love and martyrdom. And I mean, I was struck by several ways you described this film, and one of them was that it's a film about bodies, and that just it struck me as such a bizarre line. What do you mean?
So I approached this film, among other things, through the lens of the theology of the body of Pope St. John Paul II. For John Paul, the invisible God and the meaning of love is made visible in the human form. And cinema, we often think of cinema as a vehicle for delivering dialogue and drama. So we think in terms mm-hmm. of stories, we think in terms of books and maybe television. But cinema from its origins has always been a visual medium. It has, in a sense, as much in common with painting and sculpture as it does with drama. So when you look at movies that deal with similar themes, conscience and martyrdom and so forth, A Man for All Seasons and Sophie Shaw, The Final Days, which are both movies that I love, these are movies that really focus on the words. They're duels, they're verbal duels, and they're duels of ideas. And I'm not saying that they're not visually beautiful, but what Malick, as a visual artist, has done in this movie is really to explore the significance of the human body as a lens of what human beings are called to be, and then what they are reduced to by the Nazi horror.
You know, you really describe it well. I didn't know much about Blessed Franz Jägerstätter. I learned about him really as I was reading your review. And his story is not only one of giving his life because of his objection to the Nazis, but also it's a love story. I mean, it's the story of his wife as well, and their relationship. So I recommend to all of our readers and our listeners to read this review and to try to see the film. It's a long one. It's 3 hours, but at Christmas time, it seems like a very appropriate film. The Hidden Life, and of course, there's also the hidden life of our Lord, where so much happens that that we can imitate and really live out our own gift of self. So thanks for reviewing this for us and calling it to attention. Of course, this is the Christmas season, and there's so many films to see. It's a time where a lot of people go out and see a lot of films. And so I know Matthew's been itching to ask you about some of the expected big hits this season.
Well, Deacon, what did you think of Frozen 2? Because that was one of the big ticket items heading into this season.
You know, I really wanted, and I had high hopes, that I might enjoy Frozen 2 more than I did the first one. And I was one of the skeptics of the original film, but I loved the premise, the idea of a Disney princess fairy tale movie with two sister heroines, kind of co-protagonists. And I was let down, among other things, by the fact that the movie gave them basically no relationship by separating them for years while they were growing up and then kept them apart for the entire runtime of the film. So one of the things that I did like about Frozen 2, just to give it its due, it does improve on the original in this respect. The relationship of Elsa and Anna is at the center of this movie, and all of its young fans, all the young fans of the original, I think, are going to be excited about that. Unfortunately, that's about the only way that the new film improves on the original. It's crowded with so much story, so many different moving parts dramatically. I think it's a classic case of overthinking a sequel, which really didn't have anywhere to go, because the kind of mythic arc of the characters in the first film was completed. So they reach out for themes that are, I think, come very naturally to Disney's storytellers and are maybe in the air with Maleficent 2 also having come out the month before. It turns into a conflict of European colonialists and oppressed indigenous people, which, you know, doesn't have anything to do with the themes of the first film. And then it manages to box those by having its oppressed indigenous people, the Northuldra, be kind of passive and not play any role in their own deliverance. So in the end, I think it was really a letdown for me. And then on top of all of those things, at least the first film had the songs. It had one memorable song after another. And Frozen 2 really had at most one, and even that one wasn't that great. So I think pretty much a letdown on almost all fronts.
So to torture the pun, Frozen left you cold.
Yes.
But what are you hearing about Star Wars?
I am seeing Star Wars soon, but I'm trying to keep as spoiler-free as possible. So
right.
the one thing I know is that J.J. Abrams, who did the first of the new Star Wars trilogy, was just bent on trying to make it as nostalgic as possible and to give the fans what they wanted. Rian Johnson, who did the next one, The Last Jedi, went in completely the opposite direction. He wanted to subvert expectations and make a kind of iconoclastic Star Wars movie. That proved to be very unpopular with the base. Now J.J. Abrams is back, and so I expect in many ways this one is going to be a return to form for that film.
Yeah. And I also have to ask you about Knives Out.
Yes. Wow. What a lot of fun. You watch it. Knives Out comes from Rian Johnson. He's the filmmaker I just mentioned who did The Last Jedi. And he's a very clever filmmaker. He really thinks his way through a plot. He also did Looper. His movies are very intricate. And watching this film, which has such a great cast, Daniel Craig, Chris Evans, Jamie Lee Curtis, Don Johnson, Toni Collette, it's really a kind of an updating of the classic murder mystery whodunit, the British manor home, a dead patriarch, a whole family full of suspects, and a very, very unusual resolution. Witty dialogue, great performances, and like I said, this is a genre that used to be kind of a staple for Hollywood, but which we don't see so much anymore. I think that it's being very universally enjoyed, and I think it's a testament to Johnson's skills as a filmmaker.
Would the last I was going to say, would the last really good one like this be something like Gosford Park, or has there been something between then?
You know, that's a good question. Gosford Park really, I mean, it kind of pays homage to the same genre. But in the end, it was really more of a who cares than whodunit. Robert Altman took the genre in a completely unexpected direction in that way. You know, people are reaching back to the likes of Clue, which I thought I tried to rewatch it a couple weeks ago, and I just found it to be unendurably bad. So yeah, Knives Out, very excited about it.
You know, we have this chat that Matthew and I use because we're not in the same studio, and so we have to communicate somehow. And literally, Matthew's face lit up when you started talking about Knives Out. So I know what Matthew's going to see very soon. You know, Stephen, one of the biggest things watched lately has been Martin Scorsese's The Irishman. I mean, it debuted on Netflix and was just, it had an incredible first week. What do you think of that series, I guess you should say?
It's made to be viewed as one film, but it is 3.5 hours long. I was also blown away by The Irishman, but as you watch it it's like A Hidden Life in the sense that it really does need to be as long as it is. But the first two and a half hours, this is a film about one possible version of the disappearance of Jimmy Hoffa. And it stars Robert De Niro as the mob hitman through whose eyes we see the story. It's got Al Pacino as Jimmy Hoffa. Joe Pesci plays a mafioso named Russell Bufalino. And for the first two and a half hours, you may feel like you're watching a very familiar, very well-made Martin Scorsese gangster picture. He's doing a lot of the things that he's done before. One thing that's new is they're using de-aging technology like we've seen in the Marvel movies to allow these guys to play themselves over a course of a number of decades. But in the last hour, and really the last half hour, hour. And then within that, even in the last scene, in the last shot, Scorsese takes the story in a completely different direction. He puts it into a moral and even spiritual perspective as we watch what happens to this man after the drama of his life, the exciting story that we've seen through his eyes, because he's telling us the story as an old man in the nursing home. And so this is his story as it exists in his mind. We're in his head. And what we find as it goes on is that the inside of this character's head, Frank Sheeran, the hitman played by Robert De Niro, has become a very lonely place. And the things that he's done, the way that he's closed all of the doors in his life that he would have cared about on people that he would have wanted to be there for him in the end. You know, the famous shot at the end of The Godfather, where the door to Michael Corleone's study closes on his wife, Kay, and she grasps that, you know, she's out on the outside. She's not in there with Michael. That shot is very famous. And it's been parodied. It's been played with. Scorsese does something new with it here at the last shot of this film. You see that there's a sense in which this character, after all he's been through, he realizes the people that he's shut that door on, and he wants to try to leave it open somehow to God. And that, to me, is the thing that makes it such a powerful film.
Very good. Well, Scorsese is certainly good for those kind of surprises. And Deacon Stephen, you've actually bookmarked this show with 2 3-hour films worth seeing. So thanks for sharing those with us. And for more of Deacon Stephen's films, you can go to decentfilms.com. And remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, to check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.